Coming up, false and malicious gossip and the pain that it can cause, especially when it's spread on the internet. And the Christmas story told in a popular church service called the Festival of Lessons and Carols.
You let the music, the carols, the texts, the prayer.
Plus Hanukkah, the blessings, the food, and the tradition that go with the menorah.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome. I'm Kim Lawton, sitting in for Bob Abernethy. Thank you for joining us. As President Barack Obama and congressional leaders tried to agree on an agenda for this lame duck session of Congress, religious leaders continued to push for action on several pieces of legislation. One important bill for many faith-based groups, the Healthy, Hunger-Free Kids Act, was passed by the House of Representatives on Thursday. Among other things, the measure would expand the number of children covered in school lunch programs. President Obama has made ratification of the START nuclear treaty with Russia one of his top priorities. And that has the support of many religious organizations, including the Catholic bishops, mainline Protestants, Jews, and some evangelicals. The faith-based American Values Network is sponsoring TV ads calling for immediate ratification of the treaty on moral grounds. A broad faith coalition is also urging Congress to take up the DREAM Act, which would help undocumented immigrant children by creating a pathway to citizenship for those who complete 2 years of college or military service. There's much less religious agreement as Congress debates whether to overturn the 17-year-old Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which bans gays from serving openly in the military. The Pentagon's report this week found that 70% of service members thought there would be little or no negative effect from lifting the ban. But the report acknowledged that military chaplains are sharply divided on the issue. Religious groups are actively lobbying on both sides. In Oregon, religious leaders across the spectrum are expressing solidarity with the Muslim community after a suspected case of arson at a local Islamic center. The fire occurred after a young Somali-American man who occasionally worshipped at the center was arrested for plotting to set off a bomb at a Christmas tree lighting ceremony in Portland. Local interfaith clergy joined hundreds of residents in support of the center. Muslim groups have requested more protection. As the State Department dealt with the WikiLeaks release of thousands of confidential internal documents, there was another U.S. diplomatic revelation involving the Vatican. An Italian newspaper obtained documents showing that after the death of Pope John Paul II, American diplomats in Rome had drawn up their list of 16 potential successors. According to a telegram sent to Washington, the diplomats were shocked and speechless when Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger was elected. He wasn't on their list. The WikiLeaks release this week showed once again that the internet has become a powerful tool for spreading information that people had hoped to keep secret. It's also a powerful means for spreading malicious and false gossip. Religious traditions condemn gossip as sinful, but online gossip is still a problem, even at faith-based schools. Betty Rollin reports.
It's called cyber abuse, and it looks like this. This is the sort of message that Erin Roy and her sorority sisters found themselves confronted with in Erin's junior year of college. Erin is now a senior at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York, a small college with a Catholic heritage.
One day I came home from class, walked in my house, and my housemates were huddled around the computer, and they said that they had heard of and found this website. So I went over, checked it out, and just saw terrible, terrible things written. Initially, it definitely affected a lot of girls I know. I think they were just devastated, embarrassed, upset. Marist is a very small school, so one person hears something and it spreads like wildfire, even if it holds no truth.
The website that was spreading the malicious gossip at Marist and 500 other colleges and universities was called Juicy Campus. Incredibly, the students had no way to stop it since the messages were all anonymously written and the website was under no legal obligation to remove it.
Some of them definitely probably were written by men who maybe left off on the wrong foot with a girl. Maybe something happened and, you know, he didn't think of her in the highest regards. And for girls, jealousy. They know this site is anonymous, so they're just so willing to jump on their computer and write comments about people because they know they'll never be caught.
Eric Zier, who graduated from Marist last year, was class president. A fellow student's email alerted him to the problem.
Two of my roommates have suffered eating disorders and have been getting help from the school. And because of this site, they've been up for panic attacks most of the night.
The site became like a campus virus affecting everyone. There was a particular fear that potential employers would see the comments. Given that there was no legal way to stop postings, the question was, how do you stop them? Student leaders and administrators first considered banning the site, then decided to launch a campaign.
We actually found a program that Princeton was using, they came up with, called Own What You Think, which is a way for students to basically voice their opinions in a constructive, respectful, and a way that isn't anonymous, so you can find out exactly who is saying what about each other.
And what were the opinions?
Hey, Julie, you're the best roommate ever. To Brandon, thanks for helping me out with my homework. You're a great person and a really great friend.
In addition, they flooded Juicy Campus with messages of love.
So all of this together seems to have worked.
It actually did. Students really bought into the idea of social change and that we won't stand for this. And as a community, we really made a difference.
Although Juicy Campus ran out of money and eventually shut down, other sites are alive and well. And the targets are not only on campuses. Michael Fertig, who lives in Northern California, is in the business of trying to protect adults and companies from online attacks.
Our customers tell us that their lives have been ruined, that their livelihoods have been ruined, that their sense of dignity has been ruined, that their kids' mental health has been ruined. Your education, your training, they're all tied up with your name, and your livelihood is tied up with what people see about you when they look up your name online. Our job is where there's a problem and where we want to remediate the problem by repairing the Google results is to make sure that the most recent, truthful, and good stuff shows up on the top of Google and the nasty attacks descend so that they're harder and harder to find.
This is Manhattan High School for Girls on East 70th Street in New York City, where they consider the act of gossip to be a sin, a huge sin. The Orthodox Jewish girls who attend this school are made aware every day of the danger of gossip, which they call Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is speaking ill of someone or even listening to such speech. Even though constructive criticism and conversation can be allowed, harsh criticism is forbidden.
Well, human beings which are created in the image of God deserve to be protected. Their dignity should be protected, that even if they do something wrong, they should not suffer embarrassment. They should not be degraded by other people.
This morning, the subject of Lashon Hara is part of Rabbi Prager's lecture. But what if someone seems to deserve criticism?
Once we establish that the person did something wrong, we're still obligated to try to find, to minimize the wrong. Maybe the person didn't understand, the person doesn't know.
And what about gossip that is intimate but not critical?
There is a prohibition of spilling the beans. If something was told to you in privacy, the person does not want it to get out, you have no right to tell it to anyone.
Have you seen Ita? Oh my gosh, yeah, I did. And you know what? I'm going to tell you what she said about you.
The students regularly do skits about the evils of Lashon Hara.
Shava told me everything that you said about me, Ita. We are not friends anymore.
But avoiding nasty comments isn't always easy.
I think I've been in a few situations where I had a really juicy story to tell over to people and it really wasn't something so nice about somebody else. And I stopped and just thought about it. And these laws, learning the laws every night, it really helped me just bring about an awareness that I stopped to think about before I said the story that maybe I really shouldn't say this.
Every single day you're talking with your friends and there's always new conversations and new pieces of gossip to talk about. like, it does get easier because you have to first learn the laws, you have to want to do it, and then you just have to push yourself and control yourself.
That was complete lashon hara, and I'm really, really sorry.
It turned me into a more positive person, because if I'm not saying bad things about people, then it affects the way I think.
There are times when Jewish law allows, even condones, lashon hara. When giving factual information in a court of law, for example, or to protect a person from imminent harm. And outside Jewish law, defenders of gossip say that often it's just a way that friends bond. The girls at Manhattan High School are largely unaffected by the biggest conveyor of gossip, namely the internet. For the most part, this Orthodox community prohibits use of the internet. But many people, especially young people, virtually live on the internet where it's open season, and there is no law to protect them.
The law today is set up in such a way that the website where you publish that content is absolutely immune from liability. So even if you do defame someone, absolutely defame someone, the website where you publish the content never has to take it down.
In spite of the victory at Marist College, many other colleges are dealing with the problem of online gossip sites, and which, given their growth, will continue to be a problem for some and a temptation for others. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Betty Rollin in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Christians are celebrating Advent, the time of spiritual preparation leading up to Christmas. In the Holy Land, the season got underway with fanfare at the annual celebration by the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem, the traditional birthplace of Jesus. Palestinian authorities hope the festivities will attract more tourists to the West Bank town. At the Vatican, Pope Benedict XVI presided over the annual Advent Vesper service in St. Peter's Basilica. During this Advent season, many churches here in the U.S. hold a special service called the Festival of Lessons and Carols. I took a closer look at this popular pre-Christmas tradition.
It's one of the best-loved church services during the Christmas season. With scripture and song, the Festival of Lessons and Carols retells the Christmas story. And for many, it's a moving spiritual experience.
Lessons and Carols is not a concert. It's not where you're going to applaud after everything. You're going to allow yourself to meditate at a much deeper place.
The service intersperses prayers, carols, and Bible readings. Traditionally, 9 passages called lessons.
Then the Lord God said to the woman, "What is this that you have done?" The woman said, "The serpent tricked me and I ate."
The readings start at the beginning with the book of Genesis and the story of Adam and Eve sinning in the Garden of Eden and damaging their relationship with God. The lessons move on through the Old Testament prophets who foretell the coming of a Savior who will restore the relationship with God.
The virgin shall be with child and bear a son and shall name him Emmanuel.
And then to the Gospels, which describe the coming of Jesus.
And of his kingdom there shall be no end.
From a theological standpoint, and actually from a visual standpoint, it is getting that wide-angle lens and moving back and seeing the whole story, seeing the panorama of God's plan for salvation for humankind and why that was even necessary.
Canon Sirota wrote a book called Preaching to the Choir. She says the songs after each reading help amplify the message.
In a sense, the hymns and carols, most of them are based on biblical sources. So they are interpreting for us. The music really tells you how to feel about the text.
The Festival of 9 Lessons and Carols has its roots in ancient Christian vigils. But the service in its current format was first held in 1918 at King's College in Cambridge, England. It was adapted by Reverend Eric Milner White, Dean of King's College and a former Army chaplain. Milner White was preparing a Christmas Eve service just after the end of World War I. The war had taken a heavy toll on his flock. About half of King's undergraduates had gone off to war, and a third of them never came back. Milner White wanted to do something special.
You have to visualize December 1918 in Cambridge. You've got a congregation which is probably largely made up of widows, girlfriends, in those days they'd have been called fiancés, children, there to somehow deal with this horror that they'd just been through. I think he wanted to deliver some level of comfort that all this pain and suffering and death had some meaning.
Bill Edwards is author of a book called The Festival of Nine Lessons and Carols. He says the service that Milner White put together caught on.
Throughout the early 1920s, more and more people would attend the service. And by 1928, it was well known enough that the BBC, which it was then in its infancy, I mean, we're talking radio 1928, picked it up to broadcast throughout the British Isles and then 2 years later throughout the world.
Minnesota Public Radio began broadcasting the King's service across the U.S. in 1979. The service in King's College's magnificent 16th century chapel is not televised. People line up outside for days before Christmas Eve, hoping to get one of the best seats. Edwards describes himself as a lapsed Congregationalist, but says attending the service in person was like being on a religious pilgrimage.
My favorite is, I think, probably everybody's favorite, and I can't even talk about it without getting choked up because it's so emotional, and that's hearing those first few bars of Once in Royal David City. Just magic, magic.
The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him.
Local churches began copying the King's service and then adapting it. People in the pews loved the format, and pastors appreciated it because they didn't have to come up with a sermon. Protestants and Catholics alike do lessons and carol services. The Catholic version usually includes some rendition of Ave Maria.
Ave Maria.
While many services stick with the familiar carol favorites, others incorporate more contemporary songs or songs from a variety of cultures.
It's wonderful that a concept that's almost 100 years old has the power and has been helped by technology, i.e. worldwide radio, to say something to ministers, priests, whatever you will, hey, I can do something with this that's meaningful in my church.
As we await the great festival of Christmas, let us prepare ourselves so that we may be shown its true meaning.
Some churches don't actually sing carols until right before Christmas, so their congregations have developed Advent lessons and carols services for early December using Advent hymns instead of carols. At New York's Cathedral Church of St. John the Divine, they turned their entire Advent lessons and carols service into a processional, with the choir moving to every corner of the church. Advent lessons and carols tend to be more reflective, while the Christmas versions take on a more joyous mood. Sirota says the music reflects that.
The amazing thing about Christmas is that it allows us to celebrate a really profound joy, the joy of being refound by God, of opening our hearts to that love in a new way, and of receiving this light that will transform us and reconcile us, not only with God, but with each other.
Every Christmas Eve, Bill Edwards and his wife have friends over to listen to the King's College service live on the radio or the internet. He downloads the bulletin or order of service so they can all follow along.
Many of our friends are Jewish. They enjoy it just as much. A bunch of my friends don't believe in anything, and they enjoy it just as much. Everybody prays along with the prayers, which kind of surprised me, but they do. It's about finding, I think, some sort of spiritual component in life that people are missing.
A reading from the Gospel of Luke.
Sirota believes that's the power of the Festival of Lessons and Carols and of the message that it celebrates.
The gift of Lessons and Carols is that it takes time. You let the music, the carols, the texts, the prayers wash over you, and the light will break through. Some text, some image, some musical phrase will change you, and that'll be the gift you get.
I'm Kim Lawton reporting. Jews are celebrating Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights. In Washington, Jack Liu, director of the Office of Management and Budget, lit the national menorah in front of the White House. The eight-day Hanukkah festival marks the time when Jews recaptured the temple in Jerusalem in the 2nd century B.C. According to tradition, the Jews lit lamps in the temple with only a one-day supply of oil, but the lamps burn for 8 days. We visited the Ninio family in Rockville, Maryland, as they gathered with friends to celebrate Hanukkah. And we talked with Jewish scholar and author Erica Brown of the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington, who explained the lighting of the menorah.
In Israel today, you'll find that most menorahs, or as they're called, chanukiyot, are lit outside because that's the way the commandment should be fulfilled. But because of persecution throughout Jewish history, people lit indoors and they placed their menorahs on tables inside their homes. On Hanukkah, every night we add an additional candle. We begin with one, and the last night we light 8 candles. We light them with the aid of a shamash, which is the center candle or the central candle, and you'll see it often has a special place on a menorah. We make 2 blessings on the lighting of the candles. We actually have another blessing that we say on the first night, which is a generalized blessing. Thank you, God, for bringing us to this day. And then we add 2 special blessings just about the miracles of these days. And it's a good time to think about the miracles in our own lives. But we also don't use the Hanukkah lights for anything else. So, for example, we wouldn't use them to read by or to do any kind of mundane activities by. They're a sacred sort of light while they're burning. Because it's a holiday where we celebrate a small jug of oil that lasted miraculously for 8 days, we celebrate all kinds of food cooked with oil. Latkes, which are fried potato pancakes, are very popular this season. People eat them with applesauce and sour cream. The other thing that's quite popular is our sufganiyot, or donuts. I think the holiday season is a time of a lot of generosity and a lot of compassion and goodwill. I do a lot of community teaching in high-tech firms and law firms and other firms. In today's class, we looked at sources on light and talked about the magical properties of light as a way to start talking about responsibility. How do we have a responsibility when we can see the vulnerable, when we can see the oppressed, can't walk away from them?
Hanukkah is a time where we take responsibility for the world, not only for ourselves, but for spreading kindness through the world.
Certainly at this season of the year, I think many Jews, even highly assimilated Jews, feel a lack of belonging in the mainstream culture. And Hanukkah's always been a good time for them to come together in a social setting to feel a sense of belonging with each other.
Some students at New York's Yeshiva University say they got their own Hanukkah miracle this year. They made a new world record for the most dreidels spun at the same time. At an event they called Dreidel Palooza, 618 students, alumni, faculty, and friends simultaneously spun their dreidels. The previous world record of 541 spinning dreidels was set in 2005 in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. The yeshiva event was a fundraiser for undergraduate scholarships. Finally, a few more calendar notes. Muslims celebrate Al-Hijra, the Islamic New Year. The holiday falls on the first day of the month in the Muslim lunar calendar when Muhammad moved from Mecca to Medina. On December 6, Christians celebrate the feast day of St. Nicholas, whom many consider the inspiration for Santa Claus. And on December 8, Buddhists celebrate Bodhi Day, when they believe Buddha attained enlightenment and reached a state of nirvana. According to tradition, he did so while sitting under a Bodhi tree. That's our program for now. I'm Kim Lawton. There's much more on our website, including more about the Festival of Lessons and Carols. You can comment on all of our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. You can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook, where I have a fan page now, too. You can also watch us on smartphones and iPhones. To find out more, join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more music from the Northwest Boy Choir.
Hark are the bells, sweet are the bells, all sing the same.
Merry, merry, merry Christmas.
Throw cares away.
Merry, merry, merry Christmas.
One seems to hear.
Merry Christmas.
Words of good cheer.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, how they bow, raising the sound.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Be More. PBS.